Hello, I'm Will Shires and this is Talking Trucks. In this episode, I'm going to be chatting with Leslie O'Brien, OBE, of Freightlink Europe. We'll be running a feature on Leslie in the 22nd of June issue of Commercial Motor, so don't forget to pick up a copy. But of course, the best way to ensure that you're up to date with everything that's going on in this industry is to subscribe to Commercial Motor. For a great discount, head to www.com-moat.com/podcast. That's www.com-moat.com/podcast. Leslie, you're MD of Freightlink Europe, Freight Train, Freight People. You've won numerous awards, including Transport News' Northern Personality of the Year. You're in Motor Transport's Hall of Fame, and in 2020 you picked up an OBE. I've listened to you speaking at events, seen you on TV, heard you on the radio, and of course written and read about you in print. And now, to top it all, you're even on the Talking Trucks podcast. That's one hell of a CV. But what I want to know is how it all started. What did you want to do when you were at school?
What did I want to do at school? That's a really good question. I had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do at school. And I think now when I speak to school children, they're exactly the same, and perhaps they don't get that career advice. And I think probably what I loved was languages, and I just followed my love for languages.
Oh, okay. So what languages can you speak?
Not now. I did French, German and Spanish. Probably the only one that I would speak now is French, because of my love for France. But the others, if you're not practicing them, you very quickly very quickly lose it.
I think I can order a beer in French, German and Spanish, but that's about it.
Yes, that's just like my husband. He can order a beer and get the bill, but that's it. Yeah.
So, come on, how did that lead onto where you are now then? So you've got an interest in languages, so what happened next?
So I studied languages, and then after school I just didn't know what I wanted to do, and I went and did a foreign correspondence course with my languages. At the time, somebody said to me, you need to do shorthand and typing as well, because that's what girls do, and I suppose now that would be IT. So I did that, and I still didn't know what I wanted to do. And I was really fortunate that I had a friend who went to work for Thomson Holidays. Okay. And they had an issue with one of the reps taking the money when they were going for the barbecues and taking the money, and they needed someone quickly. So I literally went for an interview on the Tuesday, and at the end of the week, I was flying out to Magaluf. That's another story.
Okay.
And I came back, what was just intended to be for the winter, and got a job in a transport company that I wouldn't have got had I not done shorthand and typing.
I see.
That was my original intro. Never intended to stay in transport, but the guy in the French department left, and I thought, oh, I can do that. And then the guy in the Swiss department left. I thought, oh, I can do that. And then all of a sudden I was using my languages and realised I couldn't be glamming myself up as a Thomson's rep. And that's how I just got sucked into the world of transport.
Oh, fantastic. So how long were you at that company for?
So I was at, that was Gondrand, a French company, still based in Bradford. I was there for probably 2 years, when I was running the French department, and I was headhunted by a French company, MJL, based in the north of France, in Tourcoing. And they said, look, you're giving us your business, will you come and set up for us in the north of England?
Wow.
Which is quite frightening from, you know, a young age, and thought, oh my goodness, I'd never set a company up, I'd never employed anybody, I'd never done accounts, I'd never looked at health and safety, I'd never done any of that. So it was quite frightening, but I think, you know, I just thought to myself, well, it will work or it won't work, and it's an opportunity that maybe you won't get again.
Yeah. So you went for it, and
I went for it.
How long were you there, and how did that work?
So I set up in Leeds with the help of my father, who helped me out a look for, because obviously the Range Rover in France to help me look for premises, and I set that up, and they had 10 vehicles at the time.
Okay.
So they had, I think they had about two or three British drivers. So I was responsible for getting new business and building the fleet. So which we did. We started with 10 and built that up to 100 vehicles. With all the trials and tribulations of running a transport office, which was totally new. To me.
Well, and how were you received by the presumably predominantly male staff?
Well, if you can imagine, at that time, I was probably one of the only. Well, there was one other female business owner at the time, which was Jenny Baker of Baker Haulage. So the drivers did not take kindly. I think the story that I always tell is the driver coming in and saying, you know, I'll give you 6 weeks or whatever it was in this industry, and you'll be gone. And I'm saying, well, I'll show you. And of course, I outlived him. Probably that my stubborn Yorkshire character, I will show you. And there were lots of instances. You know, I remember once at a time when drivers used to be smuggling the beer over, didn't they?
And
I remember my French the owner Serge Wills saying, Leslie, we've got these two drivers, and they'd both been caught in France with two pallets of beer on the back of, and Serge said to me, Leslie, sack them, because in those days I think people did just sack them, because I had to learn very quickly that you can't actually do that. So we go through the disciplinary, and I remember these two drivers, and they both appealed, and the first one came in and said, Leslie, you know, I'm so sorry, you know, my children are young, they're at school, they all want the latest fabulous shoes and tops and things, and we just needed the money, and please don't sack me. So, you know, we didn't. He stayed, and then the second one came in, and he was very aggressive and screaming and shouting, and actually said, Leslie, I've never wanted to hit a woman, but I want to hit you.
Oh my goodness.
And but you know what, it's a learning exercise, isn't it? So, you know, I can say, oh, that's terrible how women are treated, but actually if I was a man, he probably could have, it would have thumped me, and it makes you stronger. So, you know, these are all learning things that actually make you stand up, put your big girl's pants on, and, you know, and be stronger in how you are in your career.
Yeah. Do you think it's still a hostile environment for women? Or things changed over the last few years?
I think things have changed. I think it can be hostile. But it can be hostile for men too, can't it? And it's just that strength of character. I think women they probably have a little bit more that why me, and it's only me, and we just have to stand on our own two feet and be stronger. And I see a lot of kind of young girls now who they need to man up a little bit. So yes, it was hard, and yes, I do feel sorry and felt sorry for women then, and I have to thank my mother for making me who I am. But, you know, we have to be strong. It's a hard world out there, and you see we have got lots of fabulous women in the industry now, and I think we are stepping forward and making our mark.
Yeah. All right, so go back a bit then. So you're building up that fleet. You've got up to 100.
Yeah.
What happened then? How long were you there for?
So, oh gosh, I can't remember. So it was in 1995 that the owner, Serge Wills, came to me and said, look, Leslie, we've had an offer. And by this time, I had shares in the company, I'd been made a director, but kind of we just felt we didn't have the finances, we couldn't take it, you know, any further. And we'd been approached by, you know, some of the top French operators, D'Entresangle, Giro, and Serge had decided that we should take one of these offers. So we were purchased outright by Giro, and I entered a totally different world, because MJL was, to all extents and purposes, it was a family business, and very much we treat it as a family. The people who worked there were, sounds silly, but our brothers and sisters. We lived their problems and we all worked together. But then when you become part of a massive multinational company, it's totally different. So Giro had offices in France, Germany, Spain, Italy, Portugal, Romania, all over. And I was probably one of the only women directors. And that was really quite intimidating.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, it was a different world. And then as Giro kind of grew and they were struggling in France and the venture capitalists came in, that's again a different world. And when I look back now, I learnt a lot of things that I wouldn't have known now. But at the time, I didn't like it. And at the time, I felt that I wasn't doing transport anymore. All I was doing was KPIs and spreadsheets and targets and forecast and reforecast, which again stand me in good stead now, but at the time it wasn't a world that I really wanted to be in.
How did the Freightlink thing come about? Because your husband Kevin was already running Freightlink, is that right?
Yes, so Kevin and I met, so when I joined MJL, Kevin was running a cargo terminal in Bradford, and he was kind of consolidating all my traffic for export and import. And that was a very volatile relationship when he said, "It's too late, Leslie, I can't offload your vehicles." And I'm going, "You will offload my vehicles tonight." And then the next phone call would be, "Are we going out tonight then?" So that was a really interesting period of time. Kevin and I got together. He was at the cargo terminal. He was doing a little bit of transport. And then in 1995, he said that he was going to set up a transport company, which he did. I joined. So at the time, I was still with MJL, and so I was just helping doing the accounts. I had a great relationship with the owner of MJL, so I told him, "Listen, this is what's happening, and you're going to have to write it into my contract that it's okay that this happens." So I had it in the contract. So when Giro took over, I already had this, and of course they couldn't say anything about that because I already had it. I was working, you know, it was. So at the Giro at the time then, so I had the office in Leeds, I had the office in Birmingham, I became MD of Barbie European in Stirling in Scotland. I set up Giro UK Logistics in Bridgend for the storage of Sony parts, and then I was going to regional head office in Belgium, and then the head office in Paris. Wow. So I was doing all this, and then we're doing Freightlink Europe at the weekend. So really, you know, I didn't have a lot of time for Freightlink Europe. That was Kevin's baby.
Yeah.
And it was only in 2008 that I left and came and joined the business here.
Okay, and you've clearly grown the company since then between you. How many trucks are you running at the moment?
Do you know what? I don't get really involved a lot in the operations. So I think we're running about 38 at the moment, mixed fleet between Artex, vans, rigids. So it's a mixed fleet. So yeah, we have grown it. Kevin loves growing it because I've kind of run a large fleet. Big isn't always beautiful for me. It's just one extra problem you've got, one extra driver on the road, yep. One extra truck. But you've just got to get that balance, and you can't really stand still, can you? Because you think life's great, life's really rosy, and then you lose a contract something. So it's just, you're on that treadmill, aren't you?
Now, you're really big into compliance. And in fact, you're one of our legal panel in Commercial Motor.
Yes.
Question for you. Have you ever been in trouble with the Traffic Commissioner?
Yes, I have been in trouble with the Traffic Commissioner.
Come on, spill the beans.
So it's, gosh, I can't remember. It's quite a few years ago now. And I think it's when I was kind of, I don't know, actually. I think I was still at Giro, or it was at the cusp when I was moving over. And we had a driver. So we wanted, it was a scheme going on that you were trying to get elderly or the older generation back into driving.
Yeah.
And so we said, yes, we would help. So we had a driver that came along. He went out with our driver and it was really great. And we thought, yeah, we're going to give this guy a chance. So we gave him employment. What hadn't happened, which would never happen now, was when he came along, he didn't have his licence. And the scheme operator said, okay, we've seen the license. And he's definitely got his license. So I said, okay, fine. And then when he started with us, he still didn't have his license. The massive mistake we made was we didn't check it with DVLA. We just believed him. And he went out, was stopped at just an ad hoc road check, and believe it or not, did not have the category of license to drive.
Oh no.
I think it was an 18 tonner at the time. And what was really, really crazy was we'd actually got references from his previous employer driving. And so, yeah, so that kind of started it. They came in then and took a load of tachograph records. And we, obviously, so we're there in front of the magistrates. We were members of the RHA law plan or whatever it was at the time. So they came and defended us and we walked away. Everything was fine. Got a slap on the knuckles. The driver got a slap and that was that. I think they took two drivers who had some, the usual 14 minutes instead of 15, 20 minutes instead of 30. So after that, we were just stopped all the time. Then we got a driver who was something like ridiculous, like 200 kilos overweight on one axle. And again, bang, in front of the magistrates. And then that's when we were called. And, you know, it's really, for those who haven't been to public inquiry, it's worse than going in front of magistrates because, of course, they go back over the previous 5 years and say, we want to look at all your records. We want to look at every single prohibition that you've had. And at the time, we were a small operator. We were running on a second-hand fleet. You try to cut your costs by working with Jack Smith round the corner. False economy, which is why my heart goes out to small operators now. And it's a really stressful experience. So Kevin was a transport manager at the time, so his repute was tarnished. And I went away and said, we are never going there again. We're never going there again. I will also say it was the best thing that happened, because you've had that experience, you know exactly what they're looking for, you know. So when you have a prohibition, do you write and tell the traffic commissioner? Have you got that full investigatory process there that, you know, if you were called to explain what happened, you can explain. Kevin will say to you now, oh my goodness, Leslie's got a procedure for, you know, ordering the toilet paper. And if we're in the pub talking to friends, he will say, oh yes, Leslie's brilliant, she's fabulous. In the office, it will almost be throwing the stapler across the room. So it does not mean that, you know, I think we're working a really hard industry.
Yep.
And, you know, do not put me there on a pedestal, because that is not the story. You know, things do go wrong.
Yeah, of course.
And it's how you put them right. I think the real difficulty is you put procedures in place, and then, you know, someone thinks, oh well, I'll just tweak it like that, and I'll just tweak it like that, and I'll just tweak it like that, and then before you know, those procedures have all gone and everybody's working to their own, and it's kind of continually looking at it and saying, and I've just done exactly the same process now, looking at all the documents and saying, okay, these are the documents, don't tweak it, don't touch it, these are the approved documents. So but the other reason I like compliance is I like to sleep at night.
Yeah.
I am a bit of a worrier. Kevin will say, if Leslie's got nothing to worry about, she'll have to find something to worry about. But it's hard, so don't let anybody say it's easy, because it's
sure.
not.
Did the RHA help you out during that time?
So I think what happened was, when I left Giro, and of course, when you're part of a massive company, you have lots and lots of departments that are helping you. And I left, and all of a sudden, you've got all this support mechanism that goes. And of course, I was very lucky, because I would take that support mechanism and I would put it into Freightly Co at the time as much as I can. So I left, and I had... you know, I had nothing. So what am I going to do? We were RHA members, because obviously we operate under their terms and conditions of carriage. And so I thought, right, I'm going to get more involved. And it was the lovely Edna Gill who said, Leslie, you need to be on regional council. So that's when I kind of went on regional council, got involved there. and then from there was pushed to go onto the board. So yeah, it was a great help, and it's, you know, it's good. It's not only kind of the RHA, but the people you meet, and you all share the same problems. So it's great to have that, surround yourself with people who are greater than you.
Are you still on the board now?
No, I did 9 years on the board, which is, I think it's a long time, probably past my sell-by day. And I think people, you know, you need to move on. You need to get new blood in there. So no, I'm not on the board, but I am on regional council.
Okay. Well, something I've got to ask you about is your OBE.
Hmm.
So, proudest moment of your life?
Do you know what? I'll tell you about the moment. So it's during COVID. And I'm sitting in the study at home because we moved all the admin team home, and I'd signed up for the government, you know, kind of advice, what's going on.
Yeah.
And it just got too much. You were just getting it every minute, weren't you? So yes. I was just going, delete, 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 delete. And then there was this one, I kind of looked at it and I was just going to delete it. And I thought, I'll read that. And it's kind of a moment of absolute shock. And then the first thing, I'm sure this is a female thing, the first thing is, oh my God, well, I've fooled them, haven't I? You do, I've fooled them. This just cannot be true, this can't be me. And then the second thought, which is the absolute overwhelming thought, is, oh my goodness, my mum and dad will be just so pleased, so pleased. But you're just sworn to secrecy. So you can't tell anyone. It was a glorious day. And I went into the garden. I have to admit, I told my husband. I said, we're gonna have a glass of champagne, but you absolutely cannot tell. You cannot. This is the kind of secret that you cannot.
Yeah.
You cannot tell anybody. So yeah, I still kind of feel, oh my goodness. You know, when you see other people that just do such fabulous things, and yeah, it's just unbelievable.
So what did you get it for?
So I got it for my promoting She's RHA with the Royal Haulage Association. So it was my commitment to diversity and inclusion in the transport industry. And again, the way that went came about was, so it was the RHA annual lunch. And I'd gone, there was, I think it was Edna Gill, the regional manager, there was Brenda Ward from Ward Brothers, there was Sally Hall from Buntons, I think there was Lindsay from Bowlers. So there's this clique of girls that we kind of met, and we were there. And we were talking about insurance claims, you know, oh God, what do you do when your best driver thumps you? Kind of, you know, your worst driver, and you've got the legal guys telling you to get rid of your best, you know, we were talking all this, and I think Jim French came over, and you know, we weren't talking about the latest Clooney film, and Edna said, look, Leslie, you can really, we need something like this for girls, you can do this, you're on the board, if anybody can do it, you can do it. So it was I was pushed to go to the board and said, look, we need something for women to support them and empower them. And it was an uphill struggle because, you know, I remember kind of one guy saying to me, look, Leslie, the door is always open. And I said, absolutely, the door's always open. But is there a welcome sign?
Yeah.
Because you don't walk through the door unless there's that welcome sign. So that's how it started. It's a great sadness to me that it hasn't continued, but I walked away, and it was kind of, you know, for them to continue. So I think that's probably a little bit why I think, well, you know, they didn't do that much, did I? I think probably I do probably more now than I did then, but it does not mean that I am not absolutely grateful. And I got it just before my father passed away, so that was just. The greatest thing that he knew, yeah.
So what are you doing now then to promote diversity?
I think I've moved on from, well, I've moved on from the female aspect. You know, I really, obviously I will always promote females, and I've still got the group of females that we speak regularly, we assist one another. I like to be the voice for the smaller operator. And I think whenever I speak to anybody, I always come from it from the smaller operator. Yeah. And you know, the struggles that they have ever increasing. So, you know, obviously I started Freight People, and that was specifically, and again, that just came out by chance. I was doing a talk and someone came up to me afterwards and said, I think we should be friends. And we just met for coffee. I said, what I'd really like to do is I'd like to have this forum where you know, you get large operators, small operators, people at every stage in their career, and they get together and they support one another and help one another because we all have the same problems. She said, well, why don't you do it? I went, oh gosh, well, how would I do it? She said, well, just do it. And well, where will I do it? And it just came about very, very quickly. So it came about just before COVID. So literally I was doing it in Brig House Community Centre, small community centre, and we got 50 operators came. It was just unbelievable, right. Unbelievable. And so we did one month, and then we did it the next. So the first month we talked about bridge strikes, the next month we talked about vehicle security, and then COVID hit. And I thought, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? And again, someone said, go on to Zoom. And I went, well, what's that? I said, I'll just wait 2 months till this COVID thing passes. And fortunately, I didn't. So literally for 2 years, we did a Zoom Freight People, and we were getting just fabulous, because everybody was at home. So it was just great. And the relationships that have built from that, not just, I got some sponsors. So, you know, I got an accountancy firm, I got a vehicle finance firm, I got well-being, I got solicitors. So it really built this community that people are still working with each other. It's just so I think when you said I'm really proud of my OBE, absolutely am, but I'm absolutely proud of the relationships that have built from Freight People, because I kind of just started it from nothing by myself.
I see.
Yeah.
And what are you going to be talking about at Road Transport Expo this year?
What am I going to be talking about? Well, I'm hosting. This is really interesting, isn't it? So I went to SMUK. They had a forum where they had all kinds of speakers there. And I was pulled by Chris and said, will you just do a little interview, Leslie? And I went, oh, yeah, OK. And we just kind of talked. I can't remember what we talked about. And then he rang me. He rang me a few weeks later and said, Leslie, would you like to host our gig at Road Transport? So doing exactly what they did, only instead of Ed hosting it, I would host it. So of course, that little voice says, oh no, I can't. And then the other voice says, oh yeah, go on, Leslie, do it. So yes, I'm going to be hosting it. It's quite exciting. So I'll have to just read up a little bit about the speakers and speak to them beforehand.
Yeah.
But I know it will be a great event, because I was there last year, and so many, you know, fabulous people, fabulous companies, a great chance to network and to learn about what's happening with the industry. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Brilliant. I'm looking forward to hearing you. Now, nearly at the end of the interview, a couple of questions here for you. If you could go back in time, what advice would you have for the 18-year-old Leslie?
Be brave. Challenge yourself. In the words of the book, feel the fear, do it anyway. You know, I just wish that I had the courage and the voice that I have now, because, you know, this wasn't me at you know, 20, walking
sure.
into that room with, you know, 50 blocks. Yeah, everybody else will have the same fear as you. Don't think that you haven't got a voice. Don't think that what you have to say isn't valid. And if people don't agree with you, so what? So what? We've all got a right to an opinion. So just go for it. Be brave, because in a twinkle of the eye, the moment is past, and
yeah.
you're getting past your sell-by date.
I think we're a long way off that point. Finally, if you were Transport Minister, what one change would you make to help our industry?
You know what I'm going to say about this, don't you?
No, I don't. Go on.
Don't you?
No.
Oh, this is my hot topic, my bugbear of the moment. I would have the recruitment agency having been answerable. So at this moment in time, of obviously, you know, if something goes wrong in the transport industry, you know, the traffic commissioners hold our livelihood in their hands, don't they? And you know, we use agencies who, some of them, should not be able to operate. You know, I've had agencies walk in with the obligatory box of biscuits that they always bring in. And when I question them about the industry, they haven't got the slightest clue about our industry. And, you know, you ask if things go wrong. Absolutely things go wrong. So when I had a bridge strike and, you know, the driver passed 8 low bridge signs and probably slowed down to 3 miles per hour, probably ducked his head, hit the bridge. You know, I am hauled in, irrespective of being an earned recognition operator, I am hauled in front of the office of the traffic commissioner. The agency that I worked with that went into hiding, that I had an agency agreement with, and part of that agency agreement was that they would assess and train in the prevention of bridge strikes, they just walk away. Okay, they've got the 10,000 driver's negligence insurance, which only covers damage to your own vehicle, but they are just absolutely not accountable. And we have the big operators, you know, and the big supermarkets and the operators who absolutely can say to the agencies, before that driver comes to me, he's got to be assessed in this, trained in this, trained in this, trained in this. And they've got the buying power and the ability to do that because maybe they're taking 30, 40 drivers. But take the smaller operator who maybe just takes a driver now and then when someone rings in sick. Shouldn't they be able to be assured that that driver that walks through the door is of the same quality? So what I am trying to do now is to build a relationship with the agencies and help them. But we've got, it's a matter of road safety. So at Microlise, that was my stint. And what I said was, okay, this is a call out to operators. We are answerable to the traffic commissioners, DVSA, to the police, to the health and safety exec. Our customers ask us to have 4s, earned recognition clocks. What we need to do now is push the agencies. What are you going to have? So I created an audit document. I said, you can have my audit document. You can have my agency assessment. Let's us start putting pressure on the agencies to raise standards, because the only standard that there is at the moment is the Logistics UK Driver Excellence. And from the website, there are only 10 agencies that have that. Now, how many recruitment agencies are there in the UK? So we absolutely need to push that to raise standards. And it may mean that agency rates have to go up, because I'd like to see them doing drug and alcohol testing. And, you know, that when that driver walks through the door, you don't have to do the agency prayer. Will my truck get back? And yes, we have a duty as well, but a lot of that assessment can be, we should have confidence in the agencies. So that's the answer to the question.
Yeah, great answer. Sounds like a great cause, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Leslie, thank you so much. Absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Cheers.